walking briskly toward the stairs. Wondering what she was doing at the TV station, he smiled at her. She smiled back. Turning back to Andy, he said, "I thought you had a car." "Sure, but we're not allowed to drive to work if we're within a 15-minute walk of a train stop. Keeps down the pollution and greenhouse emissions." Hell of a time to worry about greenhouse warming, Tavalera thought, with Florida and Louisiana and a good slice of Texas underwater. Besides, all the cars are either hydrogen-fueled or electrical. Aloud, he asked, "Geez, what do you do when it rains?" Andy grinned. "Get wet, or carry an umbrella. And watch your language, pal. They might hear you." Tavalera had heard that line before. "They might hear me. So what if they do?" "Andy, I'm curious about..." "Curiosity killed the cat," his brother interrupted. Screw the cat, Tavalera thought. "I wanted to ask you about the Northern Lights. Isn't it weird?" This time Andy grabbed him by the arm and walked rapidly away from the train stop.
"Raleigh, you've got to understand there are some things you don't ask about."
"Huh? The Northern Lights? I can't ask about the Northern Lights?" Practically dragging Tavalera along with him, Andy headed around the corner of the red brick building.
"Have you seen a news report on the subject?"
he asked almost belligerently.
"No, that's why I..." "If it's not on the news, then you shouldn't ask about it. That's a simple enough rule, isn't it? You can understand that, can't you?"
"But why isn't it on the news? What's the big deal? And what's this emergency that we have to stay indoors after sundown?"
"Lord have mercy," Andy hissed.
He had broken into a sweat, beads of perspiration trickling down his round cheeks. Pointing to a security camera fixed to the building's wall, Andy said,
"You're gonna get us both in trouble, Raleigh. If the powers that be don't want the Northern Lights story aired, it's gotta be for a good reason. Don't..."
"What stupid kind of reason can they have for hushing up the Northern Lights?" Tavalera demanded, wondering even as he spoke who they were supposed to be. Wiping his brow with the back of his hand, Andy said,
"How should I know? Maybe they think people might get scared if they see the lights. Think it's the end of the world or something. They don't want to cause panic, riots, whatever."
"That's crazy."
"You're not in charge. They are. They see more than you do, pal. They know a lot more."
"It's still crazy," Tavalera said. Andy shook his head hard enough to make his cheeks wobble.
"Look, Raleigh, I'm going home. I don't know you. Not anymore."
And his older brother marched away from him, head down, fists balled at his sides. Tavalera stood there, too stunned to move. Chapter 6. The next morning, when Tavalera showed up at the restoration project office, he knew something was wrong. The Northern Lights had glowed in the sky again the previous night, and again all the news media had warned that there was a police emergency in force and everyone was to remain indoors from sundown until dawn. But Tavalera had sat by his bedroom window for hours, watching the delicate shimmering curtains of light dancing in the dark night sky. They're not afraid of a terrorist attack, he was convinced. They're scared of the friggin' lights. His train ran a bit late that morning, so Tavalera's co-workers were all at their desks when he arrived at the office. They all said their good mornings warily, as if they might be infected with something if they got too close to him. When he asked his computer for his morning schedule, the holographic display spelled out, "See Mr. Beauregard immediately." Uh-oh, he thought. That doesn't sound good. The others in the office watched him silently as he got up from his workstation and walked toward Beauregard's office, holding his head high to show that he wasn't worried. But he was. Tavalera figured his conversation the previous afternoon with his brother had brought trouble down on his head, just as Andy had warned. Either that damned camera on the building wall picked up everything we said, or Andy himself gabbled to somebody about me. He almost grinned, though, as he approached Beauregard's door. Maybe they'll boot me out, exile me to Goddard and Holly. Even Beauregard's red-headed assistant looked at him solemnly, worriedly. No smile on her pretty face this morning. Beauregard was unsmiling, too, as he sat behind his desk in his usual dark tunic and white turtleneck. But this morning his turtleneck bore the twined palm bough symbol of the new morality on its breast, and a small silver crucifix hung on an almost invisible chain around his neck. There were two grim-looking men sitting in the burgundy leather chairs in front of the desk. Both of them wore tan uniforms, like soldiers,
but they were both too old to be real soldiers. One had bushy gray hair, the other was shaved bald, his face seamed with wrinkles. They turned in their chairs to glare at him as he stepped into the office. Tabalera closed the door behind him and stood there waiting. Beauregard said, "These gentlemen are from the Federal Security Department. Seems you've been asking some pretty touchy questions."
"Me?"
"You," said the bushy-haired security agent. He had narrow, cold blue eyes, and his muscular body threatened to burst the seams of his uniform. The shaved one got to his feet. He was slimmer than his partner, but still looked strong enough to lift Beauregard's desk with one hand. "Raul Tavolera," he said, his voice a flat nasal twang. "What kind of name is Raul? Cuban, maybe?" Feeling his brows knit, Tavolera answered, "My grandfather was Cuban. He worked at the Cuban embassy in Washington after the reconciliation."
"Habla español?" the security agent asked.
"Huh?
Do you speak Spanish?"
Tavolera shook his head. English had been the official language of the United States all his life. No one spoke or wrote or even thought in anything except English. The bushy-haired agent stood up.
"You'll have to come with us, son."
"With you? Where? What for?"
"Like Mr. Beauregard here says, you've been asking questions about a sensitive area."
"It's a crime to ask questions?" Tavolera felt his temper heating up.
"No crime," the agent said. "But you've stepped into a sensitive area, and you need to be briefed."
"On security regulations," said the shaved one before Tavolera could ask.
"You'll be back before the end of the day," said the first one.
"Or tomorrow, at the latest," added his partner with a smirk.
They came up on either side of Tavolera. The shaved one opened Beauregard's door, and they marched him out. They didn't grab his arms, didn't touch him at all. But Tavolera certainly felt like a prisoner being marched off to jail. Parked in a geosynchronous orbit high above the Earth's equator, the entity that had once been Keith Stoner puzzled over the total lack of response from the billions of human beings on the planet below. For nearly a human generation, he had been trying to communicate with his former brethren. His first tentative attempts at contact had been swallowed up in fear-filled paranoia. His later electronic messages had received no response, even though the planet was awash with wireless communications. He had resorted to stimulating the planet's ionosphere, making the aurorae glow from pole to pole. Still no response, although the procedure recharged his starship's power systems. "Why don't they answer?" Stoner asked himself. "They've got to act on my information before it's too late for them, before they destroy themselves."
"Why bother?" replied his wife, silently in his mind.
He could sense Joe's revulsion at the stubborn refusal of the people of Earth to make contact with the Star Voyagers. "For them," Stoner answered, mentally picturing Kathy and Rick, their children. Both of them were adults now. Rick barely remembered the Earth of his childhood. Kathy had no memory of her earlier life at all. The two security agents walked Tavolera to the parking lot behind the building, where a gray tilt-rotor aircraft was waiting. It looked old to Tavolera, hard-used, its big rotor blades drooping almost to the ground. They climbed the dull gray beryllium ladder into the craft, the shaved agent ahead of Tavolera, the gray-haired one behind him. The ladder creaked and sagged slightly beneath their weight. Inside was a small compartment with four bucket seats. Tavolera took the seat that the agents indicated. "Where are we going?" he asked. The bushy-haired agent, settling his bulk into the seat next to Tavolera's, nodded ponderously.
"You'll find out when we get there."
The plane's engines growled to life and its big rotor blades started turning, whooshing like giant scythes. The entire cabin rattled. The engine noise made Tavolera's ears hurt. Before he could click his seatbelt, the vehicle wobbled off the ground with a lurch that made Tavolera's stomach heave. He gulped and tasted acrid bile in his mouth.
"I thought you'd been in space," said Grayhair beside him.
"I have," Tavolera replied, barely avoiding gagging.
"Huh. You look kind of green, kid."
Chapter 7 Once at altitude, the tilt-rotor's engines swiveled to the horizontal position, and the ride smoothed out,
although the cabin